the High Performance Platform. I'm your host, Jacob Fallon, and on today's episode, we welcome John Pruddy, a professional motocross and supercross racer turned freerider. Pruddy has raced at both national and international levels and ridden for Husqvarna and Suzuki racing teams. We discuss all things human performance, as motocross and freeriding is possibly one of the most physically challenging and demanding sports there is. We dive deep into mindfulness, gratitude, and explore Pruddy's daily routines. Be sure to turn the volume up and tune into this one as we discuss the unfortunate events and the accident whilst Pruddy was trying a world's first trick and suffered a devastating and almost career-ending injury. So, mate, where do we start? That's huge. It's a massive CV. And for us, you know, it's a little bit outside of the norm. But then again, you know, the High Performance Platform is just that. We're passionate about the individual, what gets you out of bed in the morning, and has helped you become, you know, unique in your success. So perhaps we can kick things off, mate, with a description for our audience on, you know, what is motocross and what is supercross?
Hey, Jacob. Yeah, it's I'm so pumped to be here right now and just to be out to a new audience. For me, growing up, just starting to, you know, sort of ride motorcycles out on the farm and things like that, I never really knew what else to get myself into. And for those of you who don't know, like, motocross is regarded as one of the, if not the most physically demanding sports in the world. So to be out here on the Performers podcast today, you know, I really look forward to hopefully educating, you know, some of the listeners about, you know, what goes into it. I know, you know, like, World Cup soccer is right up there as well with one of the most physically demanding sports in the world. So, yeah, it's going to be cool to sort of educate some of the listeners as to what sort of goes into the training and the body and the mind to be, you know, like a world-class racer.
For sure. So what can you just describe? So if we've got young kids listening or parents or people who aren't familiar with, you know, motorbikes and riding and stuff, we come from a soccer demographic, a football demographic. What is the difference between motocross and supercross?
Basically, motocross is outdoors, supercross indoors. So as far as the tracks are concerned, the supercross tracks are a fair bit smaller, but the jumps are generally a lot bigger. So it's more of a show, so to speak, as opposed to like the outdoors on the motocross is renowned as just like the grind. You know, it's like it's usually hot or rainy. You're out in the elements. The tracks get super rough and it's not nearly as much of a show as opposed to the supercross.
Yeah, awesome. And some of these questions might be a bit bland and boring for you, but we've got to help educate the masses as well, mate. Oh, so
absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, cool. So let's dive into your journey then. So from your very first bike ride, if you can reflect right back to, you know, I presume a very, very young kid, first time on the bike, progress right through to becoming a professional rider, you know, all the bits and pieces in between, and then we'll step into the national, international, and working with both Husqvarna and Suzuki teams as well.
Yeah, so basically it started from the age of four. I've been super fortunate and have always sort of grown up on properties. My dad was sort of riding to riding and racing, and so was my older sister. Well, she was sort of riding to the farm bike kind of deal. So, yeah, from a young age of four, I just sort of got into riding around, and it was nothing serious at all until about the age of like 15. When, you know, I kept nagging dad and going like, hey, like I love this. Like I want to showcase what I can do. And for me, like in Australia, racing kind of seemed to always be the way to do it. So from the age of 4 to 15, it was just basically riding around the farm, you know, and just doing what I love, like on weekends, just like being a weekend warrior basically. And then from the age of 15 to about 17 was when like I really started to kind of get into the groove of it. Like at that age, you're still a junior in Australia. So I sort of spent, yeah, like a year in juniors and just sort of learning the craft of it all. And yeah, it was a really big wake up call just because like Canberra locally, like as far as racing and that, I wasn't too bad as a junior. And then we sort of started venturing out in the first sort of 2 years of junior riding and yeah, got a few wake up calls there as far as, you know, the ability from other riders. So yeah, it was really cool way to wet my feet just by starting off in the juniors. And then as soon as I got into the senior ranks, yeah, I was just super, super hungry and wanted to tick every box I could to, you know, make it as a professional.
Absolutely. That's awesome. And in regards to in the juniors, and again, very, very layman terms, you know, helping to educate the masses, are you, you know, self-taught? Do you have a coach as a young kid riding bikes? Like how does all that start?
Yeah. So basically, like I was sort of talking about the even earlier days. So like from the age of 4 to 15, I was just, you know, kind of going off pointers of my dad and, you know, family, friends and things like that. And then I was fortunate enough at one of the local races, there was a coach there, and he mentioned he was doing, you know, like an upcoming weekly course, and I'd sort of just jumped on that. And yeah, so once a week I was just going out to the local motocross track and just doing the coaching with him once a week in like a small sort of group, which in Canberra isn't hugely popular, as far as just like there's just not that many riders. So at that time I was just, yeah, really at the right place at the right time. So basically every Wednesday I was seeing a coach for a couple of hours a day. And then for the rest of the week, I would just go home and do my homework as far as like the riding and the drills and the skills, and make sure that, you know, when I saw that coach on the next week, whatever drill we'd worked on the week before, like I had down pat. So for me, like again, I was super fortunate to have that land that I could do that. But yeah, it sort of came back to just being in the right place at the right time. And there was a coach there who I could jump on board with.
It's awesome. And again, it like doesn't really matter what context, you know, we talk about supercross, motocross, bike riding, football, soccer, hockey, whatever it is. It's that, you know, we peel back the layers. It is that repetition. It's that, you know, conscious practice and quality of practice, relating to coaches, finding the right coach, having opportunities. It's the same theme no matter what context. So yeah, hence why I wanted to jump on with you today, share a different view of performance, a different view of, you know, progress, opportunities and success.
Absolutely. Yeah. And like you said, I mean, you know, like you break down motorcycle riding and, you know, there's like really four things to it. And it's, you know, how good can you use your controls? How good can you move your body? Like your body position, control use, line selection and vision. You know, if you have those four things down pat on a motorcycle, it's like, let's just break it down and what's your weakness and what's your strength? And let's focus on the weaknesses and let's focus more on the strengths, and let's complete you as a rider. And I mean, much like football, I'm sure you have like very similar principles, but it's just about simplifying it and breaking it down and then figuring out what you're not good at and, you know, fixing that.
Absolutely. Can we go into those four? Can we break those down and possibly unpack them?
Yeah, absolutely. So for argument's sake, like body position, so making sure that your, you know, shoulders are nice and far forward when you're turning, so there's weight over the front wheel. Okay, making sure that your feet are gripping the bike so that the bike's not under control, or like so you're not losing control and therefore like, you know, having to grip on harder and exert yourself. So as far as like body position, using your leg muscles, okay, relaxing your upper body, keeping your upper body forward. Line selection comes back to like, you know, it really depends on the track, but you know, you're generally looking for something that flows or something smooth. And then there's vision. So vision's a huge one. And I find vision is a huge one across pretty much all sports I've ever done. You know, where you're looking is generally where you're going to go. So if you're looking up through the line, okay, you're generally going to go up nice and fast through the line. If you're looking down at your front wheel, you're generally only going to be able to focus on that. And it's going to really restrict your speed, so to speak. So, there's the body position, line selection. And then the next one's control use. So how good are you with your controls? Like how good are you with that front brake? How good are you with that clutch? And like a really good example is, you know, like you see kids play PlayStation and they can press a button 20 times and move it an inch, you know, and I can press it once and move it 2 inches. You know what I mean? It's about having that feel for those controls. It's like, can you just pull in the clutch a little bit just to give you the right revs to get out of that corner perfectly without braking traction, you know? And then can you use your back brake without skidding and losing the rear end? So again, it just comes back to the feel. So you got your body position, your control use, your lines and your vision.
It's crazy. I'm just sitting here, you know, building on those contexts and looking at it from, you know, a football performance coach perspective.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, control is everything. Yeah, body position for us is absolutely everything. And then you're talking about that line of vision or that sight is huge as well. And we always teach kids, you know, if your head's down, you're only focused on what you can see. But if you're up, you're scanning, you're open, you can assess things, you know, anticipate things. And something really cool that I think you've described there as well, a lot of it is feel and instinct. And it comes back down to, you know, all of those hours right from when you just first told us as a four-year-old started riding. It's that built-in You know, it's your ID, it's your own level of understanding of what you need to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And it comes back to, you know, like just those basic skills and drills. You know, like that's how you get the feel, like that's how you get the experience, that's how you get your vision, you know what I mean? And it just comes back to that. Like I now on the other side of like coaching, like I'm now a coach as well, just because I love breaking it down and I love analyzing that the sport itself. And, you know, for me now, like I'll have a parent come to me and be like, oh no, my kid doesn't need the basics. It's like, your kid might not need the basics, but I know I still need the basics. So it's like, something's not right there. And, you know, and sometimes you just got to tell them the hard truth and go, hey, like this. And I think if we take it a step back and getting better feel for these controls, we can make him 2 steps faster.
We'll definitely touch on coaching because that's a massive, massive part of this. But again, taking those steps back, you know, ironing out the creases is one of the cues that I use. Mm-hmm. If we nail the basics and we do the basics exceptionally well, you can take 2-3 steps forward. Until you master those basics or until you understand the fundamentals and the key fundamentals, there's no point getting to the fancy stuff.
Exactly. Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
Yeah. Progressing through some of these questions, I'd love to touch on, you know, some of your routines and a day in the life of you, you know, as a professional motocross rider, free rider, supercross rider, any of these formats. What makes you get out of bed in the morning? And then what's your daily routine as soon as you open your eyes?
So I'll start off with the daily routine. And for me, it's a bit of a unique one, but after listening to your last podcast with Adam, was it? Yeah. Just about starting the morning. So for example, like me and my girlfriend are really close in the fact of like, we wake up and the first thing we tell each other is 3 gratefuls. So as soon as we wake up, literally the first thing we roll over and we go, hey, today I'm grateful for, you know, feeling better in the gym now, or that I'm starting to feel healthier, or, you know, it can be anything. That yesterday I absolutely killed it. So yeah, I start off with the 3 gratefuls and then a power five. So power five is basically 5 things that I have to get done that day. And then I journal them. So I write down my 3 things that I'm grateful for and then the 5 things that I've got to get done today. And I get straight up out of bed. And at the moment, like right now, for argument's sake, because I am recovering from an injury. So I'm either doing like one day I'll be doing just a spin, just on a spin bike, just getting my knees spinning. And on every second day, I've got a full body circuit, which is basically rehab plus starting to move the upper body around a little bit now that I'm sort of recovering enough that my body can handle it. I found that a little bit earlier on, and we'll get into the injury later, but I was trying to do a little bit too much too soon that I was just sort of burying myself into a hole. So for right now, basically, as far as like consistent things, it's just basically how I wake up and get up. That is sort of my only real routine at the moment, as well as icing. I'm super lucky. I've got a nice recovery, which stands for no ice recovery system. And that basically is like a moon boot setup that has sleeves for your legs, and you literally fill it up with water, press a button, and it compresses and cools. So I do that every night or after rehab for my foot and knees. But yeah, as far as like routine, my routines are the morning and the night. As far as during the day, it's just been chopping and changing so much just because of my injuries. But as far as like racing wise, when I was racing, there was so much to it, and it's definitely something I want to get into because it's something that I was so passionate about and spent so long doing. Like, I only recently sort of stepped away from racing. But like with racing, there was so much of a combination of waking up, checking my heart rate first thing, seeing how I'm feeling, seeing from the data, from the training. Like, I don't know if you work much with like RPEs and things like that, as to what's coming up in the next day. Just because like with racing, there is so much involved as far as like strength, endurance, power, mobility, flexibility. To be a motocross athlete, like you literally need a little bit of everything, but not too much of one. To go back to your question, I don't know. Is there anything in particular you'd like me to sort of expand on there?
That's cool. So again, like everyone's very unique. And I think what you've just summed up, so upon wake up, 3, you know, grateful gratitude moments. I think that's really, really special, mate, that you've got a partner that you can wake up and share that with. A lot of us, we just, you know, write it in a journal. It's on a page. It's not quite as exciting. So three gratitude, grateful moments and what that does. And again, I hope that people have listened to the previous podcasts,
Absolutely.
With Adam from My Goals and, you know, just something as simple as your gratitude and expressing that and writing it down daily. It might seem like a task, but once you do it, it just unlocks this new level of like consciousness, appreciation, like it literally changes the rest of your day. Then getting into your five power topics, like the five things you have to crush for today, it just keeps you so accountable. It sets you up for the day. You don't have to think about it. You just tick things off and cross them out. So already, obviously, you're a high achiever, but you know, you're smashing your day because you've done those simple tasks, and it takes 5 minutes to do so.
Absolutely. And like you said, and it just sets a really good tempo for the day. Like if you wake up and you're thinking about like what's good in my life, you know what I mean? As opposed to waking up and going like, oh, I've got to go to work or, oh, I've got to get this done. If you wake up and go, dude, how sick's the weather been? Like, I'm feeling amazing. And you know what? I'm so stoked that I got a PB yesterday. You know what I mean? Like you're waking up and you're just like your energy, like that already raises your energy. It raises your vibration. You know what I mean? And like, I'm huge on like sending out good vibrations. Like that's something that like I constantly tell myself, like, dude, just send out the best vibrations you can, you know? And that there's no easier way to do that than starting your day like that. And then, like you said, with the power five, it's like, okay, that's what I know I have to get done that day. And like, they're the priorities, nothing else. Get them done. And then whatever happens, happens.
I think it's crucial as well. And we're going to get right into your injuries. Obviously, mate, you had that horrible, horrible, you know, stack. You tried a world first trick and you've come undone and, you know, you're going through a hell of a lot of rehab. Whilst we're injured, you know, we look at soccer players and unfortunately, you know, everyone gets injured no matter the sport. And I want to touch on a saying that I heard about riding also, Brady, that it's nobody rides for free or, you know, everyone pays the price or something. Is that a term that's thrown around in your field or?
Yeah, a little. I mean, to be perfectly honest, like I've just gone 10 years with like literally no injury worth sort of talking about. But yeah, ever since I've had this accident, I've heard a saying going around that's you've got to pay to play. And you know, like me and my girlfriend laugh a lot because like she comes from a BMX background or bicycle background. For those of you who don't know her, her name's Caroline Buchanan. She's an 8-time BMX mountain bike world champion and 2-time Olympian. So she's a bit of a savage as far as, you know, the bicycle world and health and fitness itself. So for her, like me and her laugh, we're just like, dude, in the last few years, like she's had some really bad accidents and injuries. And so we look at it now and just go like, dude, we've paid our dues. Like, you know, let's have a good run from here on out sort of thing, just because of, you know, the extent of both of our injuries.
I think that's massive. You've got to pay to play. I think that goes for all sports, all, you know, any context.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Mate, we may as well dive in. We've been talking about it. Progressing, you know, from absolutely flying. You know, I've been watching you on True Protein. We'll talk about some of your sponsorships, partnerships and all that type of stuff. But watching some of those, you know, insane tricks, massive jumps, all that stuff in free riding. Let's talk more about free riding first and then let's talk about the unfortunate accident that you had.
Yeah, so, I mean, like I sort of touched on earlier, I came from a racing background. Being in Australia, like I was never really interested in like freestyle motocross and in just doing tricks and things like that. Like I felt the way that you expressed how good you were was by winning races. And for years, you know, like I worked and worked at that craft. And unfortunately, like it got to a point where I had to sit back and go, listen, I've ticked every single box and it's just not working. Like something's got to change. And it was a really big turning point for me in the fact of like listening to my gut, because for the last couple of years, my gut's been telling me like, step away from racing and have fun on a bike. Just go back to having fun on a bike and whatever happens, happens. And 12 months ago, I did that. I sort of stepped away from racing, like I was riding for Suzuki, and I even stepped away from a team towards the end of the year. Just, it wasn't the right environment. And like my gut was just telling me like, something's going to happen. You just don't need to be here now. So I did that in the quest for just sort of gaining more exposure and just showing the world like what I'm capable of, because I knew what I was capable of on a bike and I just felt like no one was getting to see that. So taking a step away from racing, I could really put my time into, you know, working on different things that guys weren't necessarily working on. And I never really wanted to get into like freestyle, like just doing comps where you're doing like sort of big tricks like that. Never really interested me. I just sort of wanted to express myself through content and just do things that weren't really being done. So yeah, so basically for the last 12 months I've worked on like a few different tricks and sort of like niche tricks. Like they weren't just on like your standard 75-foot metal ramp, like on little dirt hits, like doing 360s and foot plant 360s. Like I'm the only guy in Australia who's done that yet. And then I sort of wanted to expand my horizon and really get an invite to X Games. So to do so, I bought a ramp that's 6 meters high, a vertical ramp that's 6 meters high, so like a massive quarter pipe, and felt if I got comfortable enough on that, I could get enough content out that X Games would see me and have to invite me. So for those of you who don't know what X Games is, it's basically a competition that's like the Olympics for action sports. And yeah, got the quarter pipe and then started to get pretty comfortable on it. And in a bid to really get everyone's attention, I was working on a world's first trick. So basically I bought an airbag lander. So it's like a massive pillow that covers the whole landing to sort of make this trick as safe as possible. Like I said, the ramp's six and a half meters tall. So I was going that and double. So I was about sort of 15 meters in the air working on a new trick. And you know, like I sit back now and look at it and go, that was pretty gnarly. But at the time, you're just so in tune with what you're doing. And I was just so confident in what I was doing that I never, like I knew the risks were there, but I just never really expected it to happen. And unfortunately, one day I was working on an alley-oop. So I was basically taking off the ramp to the left, but rotating back to the right. And as I took off the ramp, I just pulled my head back a little bit more than what I had been, and that sort of caused the bike to flip more than spin, and I was sort of underneath the bike. So jumped off the bike 15 meters high in the air and landed on the airbag, but I actually landed facing up the airbag, not down the airbag, and what that caused me to do is hyperextend my legs backwards, and in the process, I dislocated both knees, broke both tibias, and caused myself to get two knee reconstructions and a tendon transfer in my foot.
Mate, that is huge. That is so, so huge. I mean, we look at, and again, just to relate to our audience here or to the football players and our clients and stuff, we look at like one, you know, a cruciate ligament. We look at an ACL. You know, we look at a tiny meniscus tear, and this is 12 months for a soccer player or a football player to come back. This is 12 months of rehab. For some people, it's career ending. So for those who are listening to understand the caliber of athlete that, you know, Pruddy is and to the extremes that this gentleman's pushing his body to firstly jump a 6 meter ramp, mate, that's insane for me. Yeah, that's, that's huge. To then propel yourself 15 meters into the air, let alone airbag or not pillow underneath you, to then, you know, adjust your head to slightly more than what you've been doing to then end up with, you know, everything you've just described. So two knee recos, two dislocated knees, two knee reconstructions.
Yeah, and two broken tibias.
Yeah,
actually I contacted my surgeon yesterday because I said, hey, I'm going on the podcast. I'd like to know exactly what I've done so, you know, so I could break you down. So what I actually ended up doing was in my right knee, I did the PCL, PLC, LCL, and the bicep femoris. And in my left knee, I did the ACL, PLC, LCL, PLC repair. As well as with my left knee, I damaged the peroneal nerve and the popliteal artery. So the peroneal nerve was a really nasty one in the fact that it caused me to have drop foot. So basically I lost all feeling on the top of my foot and the side of my shin, which was really scary because with nerves, like they're a funny one. They can, you know, they can heal and they sort of heal at about a millimeter a day. So I was told, so we sort of waited out the two knee recos. So I got both of them done sort of straight after the accident and we're just kind of waiting on the foot, and unfortunately after getting a nerve conduction study we found that there was a zero signal getting through, so it just wasn't going to heal. So 8 weeks ago I got a tendon transfer in my left foot, and for those of you who don't know what that is, it basically means that if you're like sitting down and you rotate your foot inwards, okay, that tendon is now lifting my foot up. So yeah, it's quite an extent of an injury, especially because it's on my left foot. So that's a foot that I change up and down gears with, which to be perfectly honest, doesn't really bother me at all. It's more so like, can I walk normal? You know, like what's my daily life going to look like? And after now having, you know, those the three surgeries, everything is sort of coming back to shape. Like my right leg looks just about perfectly normal now, except for a bunch of big scars on it. The left knee is still a little bit funny, but we're still in the early stages of that. And to add to the injury list, the day that the accident happened, I knew kind of straight away that something really bad had happened. Like I felt like my foot was kind of bleeding as soon as the accident happened. So I had a bunch of friends there helping me, and I just said, like, get an ambo, like, this isn't right. And then as soon as the ambo got there, they gave me the green whistle. It's something that I hadn't had before, but it's something that I'd seen plenty of people have. So I was kind of like, okay, this is going to be good. I'm going to have relief. And unfortunately, the green whistle basically did nothing. They knocked me out with ketamine, and I had a really bad trip. It's something that I absolutely hated. I pretty much thought I died, to be honest. And then I got in the hospital, and they put me on heparin as a blood thinner. But I was allergic to it, and we didn't know this. So for 10 days, it was killing all my red blood cells. So none of my numbers were matching up. So in the meantime, I had 4 blood transfusions, and they still couldn't figure out why my platelets. And I don't know, I can't exactly remember how it works, but I think it was killing my platelets or something. But nonetheless, like, my heart rate was sitting at 110 beats per minute for 10 days straight. And like, I was getting no rest, nothing. And I knew deep down, like, something's wrong. I'm telling all the nurses, I'm like, I'm in 10 out of 10 pain. Like, I understand I've had a big accident, but I also understand my body really well, and I know that this isn't right. And fortunately, I saw a surgeon by the name of Mark Porter, and he did my right knee reco. And when I was in there, he's like, this isn't right. Like, I can see something's wrong with you. And his anesthetist actually suggested that I get off the heparin and see how I go. And it turned out to be that, yeah, I had a hit reaction, a heparin-induced thrombosis.
Mate, that is, you know, just trying to comprehend, you know, where you were in that period of time is massive. It really is.
Yeah, absolutely. It was scary. Like, there's no being around the bushes. It was super scary. Like, the surgeons all said, like, if it was much worse, like, I would have lost my left leg. You know, to comprehend that at the time, I was just like, wow, you know, wow. And I was prepared as I could be, you know, like, mentally, physically. I had my body in really good shape. I was super flexible. I was strong. I was mentally prepared. And, you know, and I would hate to have known what would have happened if I wasn't.
I think, and I'd like to, you know, stay where we are here. This is such a, you know, a unique and important message that you're sharing. And I really appreciate it, mate, for touching on it. I presume it's not easy, despite, mm-hmm. you know, how long has it been now in terms of first op through this process?
The accident happened 5.5 months ago. And then the first op was 10 days after that. And then it was about 2 weeks after that, I had the second knee reco.
Yep. And how's the foot now in terms of you had surgery 8 weeks ago?
Yeah, 8 weeks ago. So I'm still in a moon boot at the moment on my left foot, but I'm now just allowed to start weight bearing. But the tendon transfer did work, and I can now lift my foot up. Awesome. I am only allowed to take it out like once a day to shower and do about 10 or 15 exercises with it. But yeah, as far as everything's concerned, like, the surgeons have all been super happy with everything.
One thing I'd like to touch on is, you know, you mentioned that you're in the best, you know, physical, mental state that you could have been. You were prepared. You were obviously a dominant force. And for anybody who hasn't seen, I mean, people are going to check your socials out massively after this, regardless if they haven't already. Yeah, you're quite big there. But you're, you know, I want to touch on your gym setup. Is that at home as well?
Yeah.
Hey, that gym setup's killer. That's awesome.
Yeah, it is awesome. And I mean, it was super helpful for my girlfriend as well, because obviously with the whole COVID thing and the shutdown and not knowing if the Olympics is going to be on. But yeah, like, so basically for me, like I said, like with racing and stuff, like, training is basically like, you wake up, you train, you sleep, you train, you know, like, it just sort of never ended. So yeah, I just invested a lot of that money, like a lot of money back into that, and, you know, having a good workshop and having a good gym, and just, so there's no excuses. Like, I literally had no excuses not to succeed, you know what I mean? So instead of investing in, you know, I don't have the nicest car or anything, you know, but I've got a really good setup for what I want to, you know, help hopefully create that, you know, future that I want.
Let me call that sacrifice, mate. That's, you know, that's key milestones in place. You got your necessary tools. your passion, your purpose, you just follow what you need to do. And once you make it or you've made it and all that stuff, everything else you ever dreamed of comes next. So I think for a lot of our listeners, you know, be mindful of that. You know, if you want to be a professional football player or a professional athlete, do everything you have to do to get there. Don't do anything else. Just do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and again, touching on being as prepared as possible. So we look at athletes on in a field sport, and those who are prepared physically, those who've done the training, those who look after themselves with recovery, nutrition, all that type of stuff. If they do unfortunately have an injury, the injury is probably of a lesser degree. And if it's not, if it's a nasty one, because we can never truly stop injuries from happening, they bounce back a lot quicker. They're the people that actually return to sport. They're the people that actually, you know, shake this off, whether it's 5 months, 10 months, 12 months, whatever it is. And they come back and dominate because they have that resilience. Yeah, it's built, it's ingrained, and their physical, you know, state and mental state is prepared for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, like, even touching on that more, like for me, since having this injury, like I've obviously had a lot of spare time and there's not that much I can do. Like I was in a wheelchair for 4 months, basically. You know, so I just started researching. I'm like, okay, I've been stuck in a hospital for basically months in and out. All right, I want to get into the circadian rhythm. Like I'm not sleeping really well. I want to be grounding. I want the inflammation to go down. I'm going to elevate my knees. I'm going to ice them. I'm going to muscle stim. You know, I was doing neural exercises to try and get that foot to work when there was no message coming through. You know, I was going to physio, chiro, getting deep tissue massage to break up the scar tissue, meditating, infrared saunas, like you name it. Since this accident, like I've learned it, like I've just gone into rabbit hole after rabbit hole after rabbit hole just to go like, what can I do to help get me back to where I need to be? And for me right now, like my priority is like, dude, I just want to be able to walk. You know what I mean? I want to walk and I want to be able to walk normal because I know as soon as I can do that, I can then run. And once I can run, I can ride. Once I can ride, I'm back to normal. You know, and it's just like about, yeah, like being super committed to it. And it's like all I'm committing to is just like a better future for me. Like the more I do now, you know, it appears as though like the better my future is going to be. Like I want, you know, like I touched on earlier when I went back to my coach, like I wanted him to be like have that skill dialed by the next time I saw him. It was like now me for the surgeon, I want to make sure that I've done everything I can. So next time he sees me, oh, the inflammation's amazing. Oh, wow, this just feels so quick. You know what I mean? And just by like, again, crossing my T's and dotting my I's. And yeah, it's just been an insane experience.
I think you've just hit the nail on the head perfectly, mate. This is what makes you unique in your success and why you are a high performer and why I needed to have you on this platform. So I appreciate it so much. Let's flip it around. Let's do a nice positive. We'll get out of that transition for you, man. And again, thank you so much for sharing. It's huge. Let's talk about some of your highlight moments. I've seen some big crowds. You know, you out there on the bike in front of a big audience. Let's talk about some of those magic moments there, whether it be motocross, supercross, free riding, whatever it is. That'd be great.
Yeah. So, I mean, like Australian supercross in the last few years have taken some steps in the right direction as far as like getting people in there. So, in 2017, I was able to race at sort of the highest level in Australia as a privateer. So basically means that you're funding everything yourself, but you sort of have sponsors assisting. And yeah, I was able to sort of be a top 10 Australian in front of sort of 20,000 people. And then at that time still though, there was always a gut feeling, and like I sort of didn't listen to my gut enough. And you know, if there's one thing I could take away, or you know, to my younger self, would be like, dude, just listen to your gut. Like that's there for a reason. So that was like, you know, that was a really big event in Australia at the time to have 20,000 people to ride in front of and to be a top 10 privateer. Like at the time for me, like that was a great achievement. But then sort of when I took a step away from racing and started the free riding and, you know, getting some acknowledgement for the things that I was doing. I got an invite to Marvel Stadium for Oz SX Open, which is basically ended up in November last year. And it was just the biggest event, motorcycling event we've ever had in Australia. And there were 35,000 people there. And I got invited to do the best whip comp, which is basically the crowd is all there watching one dude go through a jump at a time, and he just has to turn that bike backwards. And yeah, fortunately I got an invite there, and it was just an amazing experience just to have 35,000 sets of eyes just watching you, you know, do what you love. And when I was there and when I was riding, it just like I'd never felt more comfortable or more at home. So that's when I knew that, you know, I'd made the right choice in, you know, pursuing this free riding, and I was, you know, really getting the credit that I felt that I deserve.
That's sick. I'm a very visual person, so I'm just, you know, pretending I'm you out there with 35,000 sets of eyes looking at me. I mean, that's, as athletes, that's what we, you know, as performers, that's what we look for. Yeah, that's the pinnacle. That's the dream. You said that's the most confident and comfortable you've ever been. So that's flow state, man. That's the best, most euphoric position you can ever be in.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it just, yeah, it was just like, it was pretty much from that moment on that I was like, okay, now I want to do the world's first. Like now I'm ready. You know, like that was kind of that stepping stone in between, like doing a few little things that people were pretty stoked on and that I was stoked on to go, you know what, like I'm ready to take this next step. Like if I can do it in front of 35,000 people, like I want to do it on the world stage. And that's when the whole X Games world first sort of thing really came to fruition. And yeah, from that day on, like that really fueled that. And I think that's, you know, what I fuel off is just, you know, that feeling of just, you know, that flow state and just being so prepared and yeah, just looking for more.
Can we touch on, you know, your strength training? And again, we're going to have to go back before your rehab and stuff. And I'd like to talk a little bit about the rehab as well. But if we go into some of your strength training now, you know, riding a bike at the status and level that you do, it's probably one of the most physically demanding sports in the world. You know, on a bike, throwing a bike around 15, you know, meters in the air, supercross, motocross. Can you touch on, you know, some of your strength training, some of your, I guess, your, you know, priority areas? Are you self-taught? Do you work with specialists? How does that work?
Yeah, I've been lucky. Like I've always, you know, like investing in my facility here. Like I've always invested in trainers and try and surround myself with like-minded people and like-minded trainers. And yeah, like I've always ventured out and looked for people to help just to sort of take the pressure off me and just always get another opinion. So I've been super lucky. I've worked with To The Edge High Performance Center. They're actually based up in Newcastle. And for the last sort of 2 years, I've just worked remotely with them, with both a sports psychologist and a trainer. And yeah, to be honest, with racing, it was a lot more about having that endurance, that strength, endurance and power, as well as flexibility, just because you are moving in such unique ways. But since stepping away from the racing, it hasn't been so much focused on the endurance, but more focused on like the power and the strength and the flexibility, as well as the mobility. So basically the flexibility and mobility are for when you have an accident or for when you're putting yourself in unique positions that you can bounce and roll, okay, and then you have the power and your strength there to basically help you maneuver that bike. And again, like if you're powerful and you do have an accident or you have to dab your foot hard, you're not going to injure yourself. It's basically everything we train at or train for is injury prevention, you know, and being able to maneuver the bike as well as you can.
Absolutely. I'd love to catch up with you. We'll have to catch up off the air here, off the podcast, and, you know, dive deep into some of that. And, you know, if I can ever lend any assistance, those types of things, man, I'd love to touch on that, because as a coach, learning more about different fields, you know, different performance areas, different segments, you know, learning for myself, but also, you know, trying to create different ways of doing things. I consider myself a bit of a unique coach, so I'd love to have more of a chat on that. And mate, you might tell me to, you know, disappear and don't talk to me about that stuff. You're pretty well covered, or we can do something together.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, like, I think it's all about having, you know, like-minded people and open-minded people. You know, like I've been super lucky. Like if, you know, if I was to approach any of my coaches and go, hey, like I've got another person's opinion, what do you think? I'll never like to surround myself with people who aren't okay with that. Like I always want to surround myself with people who go, okay, what do they suggest and why do they suggest that? You know, and often I find when you get the why behind their reason, you get a better understanding.
Absolutely.
So yeah, dude, like absolutely. Like if you do have any ideas, I'm an open book for sure.
Yeah, cool. And I think what you said there is really important. You know, we work with a magnitude of different specialists, you know, physios, chiros, podiatrists, other trainers, PTs, sports coaches, whatever it might be. And for us, it's very, very important, A, to learn the why. So it's an educational standpoint, especially for the athlete. You know, the athlete needs to know what they're doing and understand the reasoning behind it. But it's also great to have a team of people that coincide, because one person might know one thing, the other person might know one thing. And again, take me out of the equation. I'm not talking about myself. But for you having that team, it's phenomenal, because, you know, you might pick up things, whether it be the coaches or the specialists or yourself. Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely.
Can we touch on your coaching? So you mentioned that you do a bit of coaching or have done some coaching.
So basically, like I mentioned, from, you know, quite a young age or an early age in my career, I'd say when I was about 15 years old, like I was being coached. And from then on, I was really, really analytical and loved breaking things down. And again, coming back to like the why, I'm like, why is that guy doing that? Or why is he doing this? And sort of just breaking it down and better educating myself and going to as many different coaches as I could, you know, like throughout the younger years, especially. And then now it's just sort of formed into another passion of mine, you know. So for me, I'm super lucky. I have a bunch of locals who believe in me and what I teach, and they come out on a weekly basis. I'm on a property out here on the south side of Canberra. And, yeah, I basically just run them through, you know, from anything like skills and drills to, you know, like race pace sprint stuff and just sort of work on their weaknesses and even to the mental side of things. I know that's something like we haven't really touched on yet, but I think is super important for any athlete.
Can we interject that then? Because you did mention the psychologist before. Let's dive into that, mate. How does that work for you?
Yeah, so again, it just came back to crossing the T's and dotting the I's. I felt like I had done everything possible as far as like physically, as far as like setting up a bike right, as far as getting myself set up right, eating right, and I just felt like that was a stone that I'd never really been able to turn. So when I got hooked up with To The Edge, they mentioned that they did have a sports psych, and if I was interested that I could talk to Meg, and I followed up on that, and the biggest thing I learned was just about the controllables. You know, and there are basically two things in this world that you can control, and that's your attitude and your effort. You know, and that's it. It's as plain and simple as that. You know what I mean? Like, I can't control how the other riders are going to ride. I can't control, you know, what the weather is going to be doing today. But, you know, I can control my effort and I can control my attitude. And I'm going to make sure both of those are top notch 24/7. And yeah, the biggest thing, and like that comes back to the gym. Like, if the gym's super hot one day, it's like, you know, I can't control that, but I can control my effort and I can control my attitude about it. And I'm going to make sure that I still hook in and I still do that session no matter what. No ifs, no buts. And I think that's the biggest thing. And I'd love, you know, any athlete listening to maybe take that on board or at least think about that, you know, have that food for thought and just go, hey, yeah, that is true. Maybe I should stop stressing about, maybe I should stop wasting time stressing on things that I can't control. And just focus more on myself, because yeah, I found that helped me so much as an athlete. Because there's so many things that I would stress about or think about, and it would just go around in a vicious circle, and I'd almost wear myself down thinking about it. And until I sort of learned that, it was just like a massive weight got lifted off my shoulders. And I was like, you know what, that's so right. I'm going to focus on that.
That's massive. And I think, especially as a younger athlete coming through the ranks, you know, we're programmed or told what we need to focus on, whether it be from coaches or parents or from ourselves. You know, the narrative that we have continually flowing in our own mind is very busy. The human mind's, you know, phenomenally busy at any given moment. There's X amount of thoughts, you know, thousands of thoughts happening all the time. So all of that noise, and then what you choose to actually listen to, or that self-talk and all of those types of things. But something you mentioned there, it's that cognitive anchor. So it's focusing what you need to focus on, that task, you know, taking away all the external noise, all the factors you can't control, and focusing on what you need to. And it doesn't happen easy. You need lots and lots of practice. It's definitely a skill set. But I think reaching out and getting some assistance in that, you know, psychological format is huge, because you can do so much physically, nutritionally, in recovery. But if you're not training your mind, you're not training your brain. In fact, your brain's probably, you know, the ultimate key to unlocking your true potential.
Yeah, and exactly right. And your body can't differentiate the difference between stress, you know, whether you've made it up in your mind or whether you're actually stressing your body out, like going out and doing a marathon run. You know what I mean? So yeah, it's really important if you can let go of that and not have that. I mean, that's obviously a huge advantage. And coming back to like me working on that world's first, I find that giving myself like a little mantra that I can just like go back to consistently to calm myself down for that was definitely a big key to the, you know, to the success and the preparation of that. And basically all the time when I found myself like having negative thoughts, I would just come back to I'm calm, I'm unstoppable. So if I was ever thinking about the jump and, you know, like getting scared or getting, you know, fear was creeping in, you know, I'd put that fear in my back pocket and I would just go, you know what, I'm calm, I'm unstoppable. And like if I was warming up and just, you know, stretching before I was going to go out and try it, I would just continually have that just going to my head, I'm calm, unstoppable. And then literally every time before I took off that ramp, like I'd take a deep breath in and I'd just be like, I'm calm, unstoppable, and just cruise on in. You know, and it's just having that space that I could go to, you know, just reassure yourself and just give yourself that little pat on the back just before, I found helped me massively.
It is. It's huge. Those little mantras and whatever works for you, obviously it takes practice and stuff, but what works for you is the key ingredient. And you can bring yourself back to that baseline no matter where you are. You could be in the worst predicament situation in the world. If you're good at what you do and you can bring yourself back to that position, then you're unstoppable. You are.
Yeah, absolutely. And you hit the nail on the head there. Whatever works for you, you know what I mean? Like for someone else, they might need, like, I'm a psycho and I'm strong, you know what I mean? Like whatever. And that's the biggest thing. Like you got to find what works for you. But for me, I found keeping myself calm in that environment, I was going to get the best results. Like if I was working myself up too much, I found like I wasn't going to get the right results or I could have made, you know, a worse mistake. So yeah, I mean, I think you really hit the nail on the head with that one.
I mean, we're all so, so different, yeah. As you described, some people, you know, perform in aroused states, some people perform in emotional states or relaxed states. So it is really figuring out what works for you. And you've got to try these things. You know, you might perform at one and not at the other. And it takes practice, it takes time, and it's a skill. So you got to build on that, definitely. Can we talk about, I just want to touch on one thing. So you mentioned like breath work and breathing and stuff as well. Is that something which we're talking about at the moment, going through all these different performance measures, you know, helping yourself to get better, to repair? What type of breath work or breathing do you do, if any?
Basically just, I'll just follow like a breathing meditation. So like, you know, there are so many apps right now, but, I just go into a different one all the time and just go like, you know, oh man, I can't even remember what it's called, but it's just, yeah, basically like an assisted breathing and you just sort of follow them and go through that. It's nothing too special, like it's nothing too unique. Like I do know like the Wim Hof and things like that. I've never really got involved in those type of things, but yeah, it's just about following those apps and just finding something that works for you. And yeah, I just found that there's a few different ones that work for me. Yeah,
sure. The only reason I ask is because I was just thinking while you're talking about that, you know, repair, rest and repair state, and for especially now for your rehab, we talk about, you know, the recovery mechanisms and where your body needs to be to produce that, to get better at that. And 90-90 breathing, I don't know if you've ever done any of that. It's actually where you lay on your back, you have your legs elevated at a 90-degree angle.
I haven't.
Yeah, cool. What I'll do is I'll send you some stuff anyways after this. And in terms of, you know, bringing your body back to its natural state to actually repair in its best format or best way, for us, we find that this 90-90 breathing is phenomenal. So if we have any clients that are, you know, injured or coming through a recovery phase, we give them a lot of breathing techniques. And it just allows the body to reboot, to reset, and, you know, replenish as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm on board. Let's go.
Yeah, cool.
Hear about it.
All right, let's touch on, mate, if we can progress. I see you're wearing a lovely True Protein shirt there. Yeah, looks exceptional. Can you touch on some of your, you know, endorsements, sponsorships, partnerships, you know, taking your, I guess you mentioned that you're sort of outside your industry as well. You collaborated with a few people. You have your awesome company. Is it Vibe
Imagery? Yeah. So basically, like, forever. I mean, anyone who's in a sport where, you know, it costs money, they're always looking for sponsorships or help and things like that. And fortunately, you know, I've been in the sport for over 10 years now. So, you know, I've worked at trying to get sponsors here, trying to get sponsors there. Like, how can I help them? Like, what can I do? Et cetera, et cetera. And then, yeah, sort of for the last 12 months, I've really combined like my two passions of, writing and photography, and to basically come up with a super professional media document that I can sort of send out. And basically I feel like the biggest way to help get sponsors is to, you know, approach them in a way that you can help them. I think the biggest thing is with kids these days is they basically go, hey, I want you to sponsor me, I want you to give me stuff, instead of going, hey, this is who I am, this is what I can do, this is how I can help you, what do you have coming up, like what are your upcoming, you know, content pushes that I can help with. So super fortunate. I've aligned with True Protein. They're an amazing sponsor. Their supplements are ridiculously good. And I mean, all you have to do is get any of their products to know that they really care about the quality of their products, whether it's the supplements to the clothing, to the shakers, you know, absolutely everything. They don't cut corners, and that's what I love about True Protein. I've aligned with Jim Mills Direct, which is like a local gym meal company. And again, like it's just about feeling your body as well as you can, for especially for me right now. It's super important. Going through all this rehab, I've got to be feeding myself right. So I've had those two guys align with me. And yeah, again, it just comes back to how can I help them?
I think it's a really unique way to look at it, because you're right. People want a sponsor, you know, people need a sponsor. It obviously helps you go a long way as an athlete, whether it be, you know, recognition or backing or financial support, whatever it, you know, it comes down to that a sponsorship, you know, helps with. But it's all about the athlete. Like, I need this, I want this. I think the way you've just described that is really cool, that, you know, how can I help you? What can we do together? Those types of things.
Yeah, and definitely, and trying to align with a brand who you could organically promote. You know, someone who actually aligns with you and aligns with your vision and aligns with your passion. Like, fortunately for me, True Protein, you know, sell supplements that I take daily. You know, I need that. Like, that's something I need. So it's easy for me to promote that. It's easy for me to talk to you now and go, hey, dude, like, these supplements are the best in the world. I freaking love them. I take them every day because I do. You know what I mean? It's the same with, like, the brands that I align with as far as, like, riding. You know, like, I wear ThorMX gear and I've aligned with them. I have a great partnership with them. And that comes back to them having amazing gear that I love, and reached out to them and said, hey, I'd love to do something. You know, now I've been able to have tours of their, you know, facilities in California and things like that, you know, just because they loved what I was giving back to them, you know. And it's not always about taking, it's about giving as well. So yeah, I'm super fortunate, but I think the biggest thing is definitely aligning with brands that you genuinely would buy their stuff already.
100%. You've got to have that connection, you know, at a deeper level than just the what you're wearing on your shirt. And we see it all the time. And I think people can, you know, people can see that as well. It's very, if somebody's just got a brand or a sponsor slapped on their bike or their shirt or their, you know, whatever it might be, it is, it's phony. It's not authentic. The vibe, the feel isn't there. So aligning yourself with brands and products that, you know, meet your, you know, your vision, your purpose, your philosophies, it's super important. And especially for us as well, you know, we, over the years and opening this performance center, there's obviously a lot of different brands, yeah? And every coach here in Victoria on the soccer pitch all has the same brand, the same gear, the same layout. And it's great. And no disrespect to anybody else, do what makes you feel good and what works for you. But all of these brands just throwing gear at you and stuff. Like, I don't feel a connection to that. I don't feel a purpose or a backing, and I don't really feel good talking about that or promoting that. So having that alignment and everything you've just described, I think is massive.
Absolutely. And sort of back to that, like, I'm not afraid to reach out to someone and go, hey, like, I'd love to hear about some upcoming marketing campaigns. Like, do you have something that maybe I could fit in? And don't get me wrong, dude, like, I get turned down all the time. I've been turned down heaps. But, you know, like, True Protein is a perfect example. When you think of True Protein, you don't think of motocross. You know what I mean? But through that alignment, they've gone, hey, we have a marketing campaign that involves a Ford Raptor. Do you think you could jump over? I'm like, yeah, absolutely. Bring it on out. You know, and from then, we've built an amazing relationship. You know, like, you just never know what you're going to get unless you ask. And that's the biggest thing that I've learned. And that's the biggest thing that my girlfriend's encouraged. She's just like, you just don't know. So don't be afraid to ask. Don't be afraid to reach out. And, because, I mean, if you don't ask, it's already a no. It's like, what do you have to lose?
100%. Were they your images and stuff, or was that their photographers and stuff, that some of that promotional stuff with the Raptor and your bike and those pictures, man, that was phenomenal. That was awesome.
Yeah. No, that was an in-house photographer, Kurt Tills. He's an amazing photographer. I've been a fan of his work for years. So it was actually, it was a really cool, like, pinch me moment when he actually rocked up and, you know, was shooting me, you know, because like I said, I'm a photographer as well. I'm in my sort of spare time. And it's a huge passion of mine. So to be able to work with someone who I love their work was just, a real pinch me moment. And yeah, so that day I was actually just doing all the writing, so I didn't get to create any early content, but I was in front of the camera instead of behind it.
It's cool. And again, that's such a unique, euphoric thing. I could feel that when you're describing it, to have that gentleman rock up and he's working you and shooting you. Like, that's sick. That's cool. All right. Let's move into, you mentioned something before, you know, tips to your younger self, a tip. For anyone listening, you know, anything that comes to mind, tips to your younger self, tips to young athletes, tips to anybody, what pops into your mind?
I think following your gut is a massive one. That's one that I just sort of keep coming back to. It's like, listen to your gut. Like, if your gut's telling you something, it's for a reason. And just don't be afraid to experiment. Okay, like in your discipline. So like if you're like a soccer player or something and you're not quite making it, like, hey, maybe try mixing it up a little bit and just try putting out some content or something, playing with the ball. You know what I mean? Or try maybe experimenting coaching a little bit or something. You know, like if you're not making it as a player, like maybe just experiment, because you never know, you know, what might come up. So I think follow your gut, experiment, and just believe in yourself, because you never know what's possible.
I think throughout this whole conversation, that's been a very strong theme, is the guts, that intuition. And at first, I think you mentioned before as well, at first, like it's kind of like a silent message. You kind of almost consciously catch it, but sometimes you don't and it's gone. And then you realize later, like, shit, I actually had that moment. I thought about that. I probably should have done this. And again, it's something that starts off very, very quiet. It's background noise and it often goes by without realizing. But as you get better at it, and the more you focus on it, the more conscious you become, more aware you become, then it becomes a thing. You're like, man, something's not right, or something feels good, or I need to do this. And then you do it. And once you do it, it feels great. And often, you know, 99% of the time, it is what you're supposed to be doing. And even if it's not, you've taken the risk, you've built that courage, you're progressing in some way, shape or form.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And like that intuition. I mean, I think that probably sums it up better than your gut feeling, but I mean, at the end of the day, it's the same thing really. And just, I think it's just because from my personal experience, like that helped me so much, because I neglected my gut for so long. You know, and then when I started listening to it, I'm like, okay, this is awesome. Now I'm getting amazing sponsors that I could only have dreamed of. I'm, you know, riding in front of 35,000 people. I'm going to California to ride with my heroes. It's just like, it just really started to snowball in a really quick time. And I think that all happened when I started to listen to my inner self, my intuition. And, you know, I would hate for someone to, you know, waste time when, you know, they could be doing that themselves.
And what's the worst that can happen, right? I mean, you get told no. You've mentioned reaching out to people and you've been rejected or told no more than a few times. And so have I. Like the amount of proposals I've put out to clubs and to club presidents and coaches and mentors, and the amount of times I've been told no, don't be shy. Don't be afraid. Don't be scared or timid, because it builds resilience as well. You know, it's a confidence loop. The more you do it, the less you care, the more creative you become, the more courageous you become. So, you know, it's all just an art form and a skill set, and just get out and do it. So again, tapping into what you've said to a younger self or people listening, if you are young, just start doing stuff, man. Like, get into it, focus on what you want to do, do different things. If you are stagnant in your progress, get creative, experiment, as Paddy said just there. So try something different. What's the worst that can happen? You know, you'll be equally on the same, you know, on par with where you are, or you get told no, you go to the next one.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
What is the most challenging thing to date that you've ever experienced?
Probably going through this injury. Just the unknown from this injury, just because for so long it was just like, will I, you know, be able to walk again? Will I be able to ride again? And, you know, like I'm almost still in a little bit of limbo as far as, you know, like I can't rehab my left knee too much at the moment because I can only just weight bear on my left foot. So, yeah, I think without doubt it would have to be, you know, going through this injury. Like I'd had a couple of little injuries in the past about 10 years ago. And for the most part, they weren't too serious. And then, yeah, like it was a really rude wake up call, this one. And Yeah, so without doubt, this would have to be the scariest for sure.
Is there anything that you can share with us, you know, in those down and out moments, some of the stuff that you've dealt with and how you've got yourself out of that?
Yeah, it's just like, I mean, a moment that I come back to is when I was just after my second knee reconstruction. I had like a walker that, like a grandparent sort of has. And I took two steps and I was dripping with sweat and physically exhausted, like physically, emotionally, like just started bawling my eyes out. I was done. You know what I mean? And that was probably the lowest point in the injury, just to go like, I can't take two steps and hold myself up without being done. And, you know, like for me, like that was probably one of the lowest moments of the injury that that I can think of. And yeah, and dude, like that was a really tough time. And fortunately enough, like I just had an amazing support network and I used that. Like I spoke to my sports psychologist, I spoke to my girlfriend and my family, and I was just brutally honest. Like, and I was just like, you know, like when I was having a hard day, I was just open about that, you know, and like I would find myself for days being, you know, like narky, and, you know, that just came back to me not feeling well. And instead of taking it out on them, I just had to be super honest with them and just be like, hey, you know, like today I'm struggling. You know, like today I'm really, really struggling. And, you know, they're okay with that when you talk to them about it, you know, and they have that little bit of, you know, a little bit more patience. So yeah, like as far as that's concerned, dude, it was just, there have been days where it's just like, I took two steps and like just started bawling my eyes out and I was shaking, I was sweating, you know, and it's just, so when I have days now that I'm struggling, it's just, you know, I go back to that moment and go, look how far you come, dude. Like you're good. You're making progress. You're good. You know? So yeah, it's been brutal, but yeah, like I said, I'm super grateful for the support network I've had. So I've been able to pull myself out of that without, you know, doing too much damage.
Thank you for sharing. And I know I don't know at all, but where you've been and what you've described, mate, it's such a difficult, difficult thing. You know, severe injuries, severe accident, long-term rehab. And I know a lot of our audience have had some pretty serious injuries as well. And like I said, most of our athletes come back from 12 months, no football, 12 months of not doing what they love. And I think, you know, it's a really important message to share with everyone. Just be honest with yourself and be honest with the people around you. Firstly, surround yourself with people that are a good support network, people that are good for you, people that you can open up to and relate to, and they can offer the same in return. But, you know, be honest and share these thoughts. We don't all have to be this, you know, tough, you know, I speak for the male population. You don't have to have this autopilot of I'm this tough, you know, egotistic, awesome person. I have no feelings. But man, open up, be honest, be real, let it out. It's okay to cry. It's okay to struggle. We all struggle as human beings. We're all facing something. We're all battling and dealing with something on a daily basis.
Yeah, absolutely. And just be, don't be afraid to be vulnerable at times. You know, like I'm almost 30 years old and dude, it was just 8 weeks ago after I got the tendon transfer in my foot, I was laying in bed just bawling my eyes out in front of my mum and dad. And that's not exactly the coolest picture to paint, but it was just like I was in so much pain and there was nothing I could do to hide it and I didn't need to hide it. You know, it's just like I couldn't put up with the pain and I was on minimal pain meds because I know how bad they are for you. So it was kind of like, all right, I'm going to grind through this. And, you know, yeah, it wasn't the coolest moment of my life, but you know what? Like I look back now and I'm like, I don't care because it's like, at least they knew what I was going through and I was honest with them about it. I didn't have to hide it. And yeah, I mean, it's, you know, like never be afraid to talk, never be afraid to ask. And like, even if anyone wants to reach out to me, it's like, hey dude, I'm struggling through this at the moment. Like reach out to me, dude. Like I'm always down for a chat, you know, and think I can help as many people as possible when it comes to that. Like sometimes you just need to go, hey dude, you're doing all right. And that was enough for me sometimes. Like all I needed was my girlfriend to go, hey, look how far you've come. You're sweet.
Absolutely. I think that's, you know, really, really cool. And again, thank you so much for sharing, mate. If people want to reach out to you and people, where can they find you, Pruddy? What's your socials?
Get on Instagram and it's at Pruddy _. So it's PRUTTI. And on Facebook, John Pruddy. You'll be able to find me on there. And by all means, like if there are any listeners or have any other questions that we haven't really touched on or if they want to get in touch, by all means, just reach out. Like I'd love to hear from people for sure.
Two more questions, and this is just from people, and I know a lot of people have asked these questions. I'm just curious myself, man. Those, like that setup, and you don't have to answer it, so it's a mandatory yep. question. That setup, those pillows and those ramps, like what's the sort of cost involved for something like that?
Yeah, that was a huge investment. As far as, you know, like a return on investment hasn't really come around yet. And so for that ramp is $10,000, give or take. And then to build that landing that high, that was about $5,000 with the machinery hire. And then the airbag was just over 15 grand. So you're looking at about 30 grand in total for that setup. And then for me to, you know, and then, well, if you want to get into the medical bills as well, it's been just over $50,000 worth of medical bills. So this year's, you know, been minus $80,000 as far as monetary is concerned.
Which is huge. And we look at, you know, I'm always trying to relate to our audience and our clients and think about it from both ways. And, you know, doing what you love, pursuing a dream, it's not a cost, it's an investment. And, you know, you've said it so well before, mate, with your gym set up, with everything you're doing, with your recovery equipment, all of that stuff, that's an investment to be able to do what you can do. You know, spending 30 grand on the ramp and the equipment to be able to pull off the world's first trick and do all that type of stuff, mate, it's massive. It is a huge blow, and I'm sure some people's minds are blown here already. But that's, you know, that's the commitment that we make. That's the sacrifices. That's the investment that we do as athletes and people that want to push, you know, towards greatness to become something that hasn't been done before. Very unfortunate though with the investment and the monetary, the costs of rehab, the cost of surgeries, you know, 50 grand plus.
But I mean, so I'm not silly about it either. Like I do have private health cover. Unfortunately, that did cover a lot of it, but there are still so many underlying expenses that you just don't even realize. But yeah, even back to sort of more of the monetary stuff, like the bikes themselves are about $10,000. And the damage that you do to them is quite extensive, especially with what I was doing. So it adds up quite quick, but again, you know, it's all part of it. Like you got to pay to play.
I think that's such a perfect note to wrap things up.
You've got to pay to play. Isn't that a fascinating reference? You know, we look at all sporting codes, all athletes, injuries are always going to be there. We can never truly ever prevent them. Unfortunately, we often suffer an almost career-ending blow. For some people, it is a career-ending, you know, devastating situation they're placed in through injury or accidents. We look at motocross, supercross, free riding. It's a crazy, insane sport. Pruddy, for example, throwing this bike around at three stories high in the air, coming up off a six-meter ramp, and you know, exploring his human capability and potential to explore this world's first trick, something that's never been done before. So if you're pushing limits and you're pushing boundaries, unfortunately, things can happen. Listening to this story, I hope you guys have been as inspired as I have been. Pruddy's outlook, he's so humble and the way that he does things. Really appreciate his honesty and transparency, sharing those down times, the emotional periods. You know, at the end of the day, guys, we're all human, yeah? We are all human beings. We all feel things. Don't be too proud to be a human. Don't be too proud to talk to your parents, to show your parents emotion or your loved ones. You know, this is our life. This is what we go through. And just experience it and be honest with yourself. Such a humble dude. We really appreciate Pruddy, you know, extending the opportunity or the offer for people to get in contact with him. Whether it be to reach out and, you know, talk about rehab or your struggles, or give him a like, send him a DM on Instagram, give him a follow, reach out, let him know that you thought the episode was awesome. If you guys did enjoy this episode and you did take home some aha moments or light bulb moments, please drop a comment, leave us a review, preferably and hopefully 5-star. Share the podcast with somebody who, you know, perhaps needs to hear this or you think would resonate or enjoy the episode. We really appreciate all of your support. This has been episode 3. We're a brand new podcast and, you know, the more support and backing and help we can get to grow organically, the better this will become for us. We hope to roll this platform out to as many people as possible. We're interviewing some really, really special humans, the high performers, and, you know, what makes them unique in their success is something I believe that we can all resonate with. Once again, this podcast has been brought to you by Oxidate Performance. We appreciate you listening and look forward to bringing you the next episode.